AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Volatility is climbing off the charts in the equity and the futures markets. The weekend surge by Democrats' Senate candidates in Georgia has something to do with it, and so does the phone call from President Trump to Georgia's Secretary of State, and the weather. Weather could have something to do with it, too. And don't forget profits. Don't forget, it's hard to go broke making a profit.
Live from the next great year via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Then we chat with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. And right after the news, Kirk Hins from BAMWX updates us. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Yeah, the volatility that's being exhibited in these markets here this morning, Davis.
Woo, crazy stuff.
Man.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. March corn was within 2.5 cents of $5 in the overnight session.
Saw that.
And it is now trading around 483. So well off the session highs, penny lower. We've still got beans posting solid gains, 10 to 15, 17 cents higher in soybean futures. Wheat has turned mixed. This Dow has really turned into, volatility central going there. We were 300, 400 points higher, now 500 points lower in the Dow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's quite the swing.
The equity guys are seeing something that they don't like. And I think you got to look to the Southeast and to Georgia to see what the equity traders probably don't like. And that is that weekend surge by the Democrat candidates for the Senate seats down there, Davis.
Ooh, it's okay. Mm-hmm.
They've made a big move. And like I said in the open, President Trump making the call to the Georgia Secretary of State. I have not heard the whole tape. I got a feeling if I had heard the whole one-hour conversation that it might sound different than the sound bites that are being pulled by the mainstream media. When you hear a sitting president say, listen, I need 11,870 votes, what was said leading up to that and what was said after that? Yeah, but on the surface, it looks like another problem for the Republican Party to deal with down there in Georgia. Okay,
man. Okay,
yeah,
one of the things that we talked about going into this. Remember, we were talking with was it Niefer and Hensley, and they were like, okay, but things will probably moderate because we've got a mixed Congress.
Yep.
So things will be tempered just a little bit.
Maybe not. Maybe
dude.
Not.
Yeah. Dude.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to the news here real quick, I got to ask, did you watch any football over the weekend?
No, not a second.
None?
Nope.
I did.
None. Zero.
I
really? Were there games? Was there a game?
Yeah, baby.
Of some sort? Was there a
Yes. Yes.
Oh, what was the result of the
congratulations to my Iowa State Cyclones. Champions of the Fiesta Bowl. Nice victory over Oregon there on the second. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got?
Well, Chip, CFAP 3 checks will be issued soon, but the Congressional Research Service has raised the question as to whether they are necessary, citing higher crop prices. A report released December 21 openly asks whether most producers need another round of coronavirus relief aid, and of course, we've gone higher since then, Chip. It notes that most major crop and livestock commodities, quote, have seen their prices increase substantially since July because of improving market conditions, with the exceptions of beef cattle and dairy. The report reads, quote, if current market conditions were to persist into the first half of 2021, it would appear that price declines would be a possible reason for a new round of CFAP payments for livestock and dairy, but not for row crops, Chip?
Legislation has been passed. They can go back and look at it, but that has been passed. I don't know how you pull it back now. Maybe they can, but we're going to keep an eye on it, obviously.
Well, Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga will urge the U.S. to rejoin the Trans-Pacific Partnership after President-elect Joe Biden takes office, according to the Sankei newspaper. The TPP was negotiated by Obama administration, so it would be, quote, natural for the incoming U.S. government to return to the partnership, Sankei cited Suga as saying. The prime minister said the group would cautiously work on the issue of China joining, according to that report. That's interesting as well.
Yeah, that is interesting, since the TPP was originally designed to generate some leverage on China.
Right?
Yeah.
Christine Lagarde is expected to make the European Central Bank a pioneer in fighting climate change by slashing its purchases of bonds issued by fossil fuel companies and other heavy carbon emitters. That's according to a Financial Times poll of economists. Two-thirds of the 33 economists polled believe the review will result in the ECB deciding to break with its long-held principle of market neutrality, which requires it to buy bonds in proportion to the overall market. This would be putting
taxpayer money where Lagarde's mouth is.
More than 4 million Americans have received the first dose of a COVID vaccine. Dr. Anthony Fauci said he expects the pace of vaccinations in the U.S. to quicken after a lackluster rollout. Within 2 weeks of rolling out its vaccination campaign, Israel has become the first country globally to inoculate more than 10% of its population. Meanwhile, North Korea has submitted an application to receive COVID-19 virus vaccines from the main global alliance, helping lower-income countries with inoculations. Chip.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Okay, like I said in the open, guys, the South American weather, it's got something to do with what's going on in these grain markets. Let's bring in Kirk Hinz, BAMWX.com. Kirk, Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year, Chip. Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad that you are here. So tell me, it sounds like Brazil is into that La Nina pattern that you've described so many times for us. It's not going to be perfect, but it's not going to be too dry, and it's not going to be too wet. What's happening?
Yeah. That's exactly right. The rains are more like normal. They're a little bit less to the north areas that sound familiar, like Mato Grosso. Those are the areas that are not so good. The rains have been variable, and obviously that's a huge soybean area. You go a little bit further down to the south, though, Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, those Sao Paulo, Santa Catarina, Rio Grande do Sul, some of those bigger areas as well. It has been wetter in the last 30 days in those areas. So it depends on where we're talking about, but it has not been a catastrophic crop by any means. They've had rain in a lot of those areas.
Right. And temperatures are fairly typical.
Yeah, there's nothing substantial about the temperatures. We haven't seen widespread 100s for multiple weeks. Like we started the season, that's how bad it was. But since then, it has yet to be that bad.
Argentina, a bit of a different story.
Yeah. Yeah, totally different. I would say 180 degrees. Things have gotten way worse the past 60 days. Over the next week, there's no relief. Temperatures are above normal. The models are trying to suggest rain returns back, in the middle part of the month. We're not really biting on that because it's a, strong La Nina in the atmosphere right now. If we would have gotten the amount of rain the models would have suggested the last 60 days, we'd be above normal, and we're 3 to 6 inches below normal in a lot of areas where it matters.
And hot,
yes. And going into a big time of the year, pollination. We got to have rain. If there isn't rain in there and there's no subsoil moisture, that's where the issue is.
Gotcha. Kirk, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Appreciate you guys.
All right. That is Kirk Hinz, BAMWX.com. You got to check it out. Go take a look at everything that they've got to offer there, BAMWX.com. All right. When we come back, we're going to do one more look back. A little bit of a look back into the machinery auction business from 2020 with Machinery Pete. You know weeds can impact potential corn yields, but how do you measure it? I'm joined today by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, tell us a little bit about the relationship between weeds and yields.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip. Essentially, immediately after you plant, your corn's yield potential is at its absolute highest. And then you start to get these environmental stressors immediately after you plant that reduce that yield potential. So higher yield potential really starts with early season weed control. because once the weed emerges, it steals vital nutrients and water, among other things that are needed for corn growth and grain fill.
Okay, so these weeds that emerge with the corn plant, how does it impact the health of the plant?
Well, early season weeds fundamentally alter corn growth, health, and eventually its potential yield. So weeds present at corn emergence are an immediate source of stress and cause corn to enact a series of defensive measures. These will include things like corn stalks growing taller and leaves growing wider, and that's to better compete for sunlight. The corn leaves grow parallel to the row versus out into the row to avoid competing directly for sunlight. All of these things are really irreversible, and they're going to have a negative impact on the yield overall.
Okay, so for corn growers that are looking to control those tough weeds, maximize yield potential, what herbicide do you recommend?
Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential because it controls those tough weeds other products are missing. And when applied pre-emergent and at a full labeled use rate, replicated Syngenta and University trials show Acuron out-yields competitors by 5 to 15 bushels an acre.
Excellent, Steve. Thank you. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try the online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Davis, it looks like the Dow equities are trying to stabilize a bit in here. We've got the Dow just working off of session lows. Okay. Soybeans, you really can't say that quite yet. They're still higher. And one of the things that's got me a little concerned about this bean market right now is that the front month contracts are leading the price declines. So it went up bull spread, coming down bear spread.
Right.
Is how it might look. So need to pay attention to what's going on here. Very much. All right. Let's bring in Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, Greg? Happy New Year, buddy.
Hey, Happy New Year to you guys as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I do want to look back at 2020, but let's start it a little bit different because everybody goes straight to COVID. Generally speaking, how was the overall demand for equipment in 2020?
Well, Chip, 2020 was a really interesting year. I would say if you boil it down as we just flip the page here, I think very good year for new equipment sales, better than expected, kind of across the board. I mean, if you look at the numbers being reported by the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, new tractor sales were up, I think, in all categories. New combine sales were up. Yeah. We certainly wouldn't have guessed that back in the spring when COVID hit.
Heck no.
And then if you shift into the used market, I mean, again, if you follow my breadcrumb trail of reporting, it's just been gangbusters. Qualified right. by saying, you know, good condition stuff. And as it was already a very strong year before the fall. And then once we had September, October, November, December, it just was like it was like the old Spinal Tap movie and someone just was turning that dial up to 11, basically.
Yeah, yep.
So it basically was as hot as I've seen since March of 13. So it really amped up.
Wow. Okay. So let's bring COVID into it because the pandemic and the social distancing and the stay-at-home orders and all of that stuff, Greg, it changed the way that so many of us do business. And the ag world was obviously included in this. But, man, oh, man, you pretty much had a front-row seat to some of the changes in the industry.
Well, it was on the fly, so that was, you know, certainly fascinating to follow and look back. I think I'll probably be writing about this for decades to come, hopefully. But, again, hats off to the whole industry, farmers at the buying and selling level, auction companies, farm equipment dealers, and even up to the manufacturer level, you know, dealing with the loss of farm shows to get the word out and stuff. But basically, the online play with online auctions is a story to me. You know, the pricing actually got stronger as the year went along since March. And so the technology is there, but I'm really excited, Chip, about looking ahead to the future. I'm seeing things like, you know, people are looking at the pricing and going, okay, these online auctions are on par or even above, you know, in some cases, the traditional auction. And we all love the traditional auction. We that'll always be a piece of the market going forward. But with these online auctions, I'm seeing smart auction firms try to merge what works in the traditional auction sphere with the online play. Yep. So say you have an online auction January 15th. Well, now these preview days, one or two days where they'll say on the listing, hey, this Friday and next Friday, you can come out and look at the stuff. Farmers love that. And it retains the personalness of the event, and particularly when you can go and talk to the owner on your own time.
Yep.
And even when you're at these preview days, you have more time. Used to be on an auction day, you show up and you want to, hey, who's the owner? Can I talk to him? Well, he's got 40 guys I want to talk to him.
Exactly.
Catch him on a preview day, have a cup of coffee, drink a beer, whatever.
Right.
So I think there's a real opportunity to extrapolate that out and maybe do like live preview days.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and just if you're the guy who's selling, just, hey, Chip, let's walk down the line of machinery. You tell me about all your stuff.
Right.
Well,
right.
It doesn't cost a nickel, and you're telling somebody in Kentucky personally about that tractor, so it's really powerful. I'm excited to see where that goes, I think.
Yeah, I think that is a meaningful change, a significant change that happened in the auction world, and it's one that I think was going to happen, Greg. It's just, you know, this goes back to the theme that we were on very early in the process, pulling the future forward, and
It
sometimes when you're forced into it, you find something that really works. And I think the auction world discovered that very quickly, very quickly.
It reminds me a little bit of NASA in the 60s, the race to the moon. Hey, we got to get to the moon by the end of the decade. Well, okay, let's figure out how to do it. But guess what? In the process, we're going to find all these technologies and all these advancements that are going to help with all kinds of untold things in different directions. So definitely the equipment market has seen that for sure.
Okay, so heading into 2021, what's the availability, the supply of used machinery coming to the market?
Well, one word you said there, Chip, to me is going to be the story in 2021, and that's availability. And really, I think we're just on the very front edge of this, but when availability comes to the fore, price becomes secondary in whatever market you're talking about. And we don't see it that often in the equipment market, but we definitely saw it in 2007 at the end, 2008, and we're seeing it again now. So, for example, I'm talking to dealers around the country who are saying, you know, whether they're Case, AGCO, Deere, whatever, you know, they can't get as much product as they need and want, because all this demand is ratcheted up. Ooh, I can move more four-wheel drive tractors in 2021. Well, guess what, buddy? We can't give you that many.
Right.
Because manufacturers, going back to COVID when it started, they, you know, understandably pulled in the reins like, oh, my gosh, we better tighten things up here. Okay.
Right.
Well, now this demand has exploded. So, you know, things like, you know, think you got to be strategic in how you think about this, whether you're buying or selling. So if you're looking for equipment, what I would do is I would go to your dealer, your partner, your trusted dealer you've worked with for years, get in their ear, let them know what you're going to be needing and wanting. I need a new combine come fall. Because when that stuff comes in on trade now, you want to be at the front of the line. You know, you got to be a little more proactive in the way you think about this, I think. And I think that pricing, it's going to be a good time to be a seller, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right. And I remember those kinds of things happening when you go back a few years when the auction world was so hot and heavy. Guys were basically putting their orders in and saying, let me know when this thing's, when this is coming available. All right.
I heard
we got to get some.
Oh,
Yep.
We got to get some reports in here, man. let's get to the pick of the week. What do you got?
Yeah, I got to give you this one, Chip. It was last Wednesday, December 30th. My good friend Jeff Boston Auction Service out of Sullivan, Indiana. I think it was an estate sale they had there, and they had a John Deere 4850 two-wheel drive, which you don't see a ton of those. It was an 86 model, only 2,847 hours, one owner. And you can imagine it was going to be hot. But it sold for 57 and a quarter. That's the highest I've ever seen on a two-wheel drive, 4850. The previous high was 53, but that was over 14 years ago, back in August of 06 in Kansas.
Oh, my goodness.
So that sale was hot. It also had a 2955 two-wheel drive for $32,000 with no loader. And also, I've talked about how drills have been hot. Had a John Deere 750 go for $19,500. It was just really strong sale across the board. But, again, super nice condition stuff.
Yeah. Well, here's another one that is some of the newest used machinery that I can imagine. Tell us about that 8R310.
Yeah, first one I've ever seen hit the auction market. It was December 21st. Our friends at Sullivan Auctioneers had the sales online out of, again, West Central Illinois. But it was a 2020 John Deere 8R310, 7 hours on it. So ton of interest in it. Sold for $290,000. So, again, always interesting to see the first of a new model series hit the open auction market. So it'll be interesting to see how many more of these we see in 2021 and what they go for.
All right, so strong seller's market is what we're expecting. I would suggest that means consignment auctions are going to be kind of a big deal.
Yeah, consignments online, you know, again, what we're seeing more of is a farmer maybe downsizing their equipment, not selling their whole line, but maybe 8 or 10 pieces.
Yep.
Get them on a consignment sale or online. So, an example, December 29th, last Tuesday, our friends at the Sifka Real Estate and Auction, Northwest Ohio, had a consignment sale, and the one that jumped out at me was a 1990 AGCO Alice 9190, 26.5, highest auction price on a 9190 in 6 years. So, again, good condition stuff. It'll ring the bell, whatever kind of sale it's on. It's just people find it, they'll pay for it.
That's right. Greg, I'm looking forward to the conversations in 2021, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Chip.
All right. That is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Coming up next, we're going to talk U.S. meat exports.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us right now. Beach, Happy New Year. The volatility has come back into the markets, hasn't it?
Yeah, quite a ride here to kick off the new year, Chip. The soybean market sprinted out overnight, gains in excess of 30 cents. And we're still trading with gains, pretty solid gains, actually, if you just looked at it on a snapshot. But trading low range and really backed off those highs and gains anywhere from about 7 cents to 15 cents, depending on the contract, mid-morning here.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the South American situation has changed that much. Our demand situation couldn't have changed that much in such a short period of time. Anything triggering this?
Well, I think the money's chasing it to the upside, obviously. And that, you get to a point and guys decide that they're going to take some profits out alongside the market. And I think that's why we've seen the pullback here. If anything, from a fundamental standpoint, the weather looks really good over the next couple of weeks for most of Brazil, aside from far southern Brazil. So that might be providing a little bit of fundamental pressure, but I think it's mostly just money flow.
Gotcha. Take us over to the livestock market, because we got two markets that are going in two different directions.
Yeah, the cattle market started out quiet in the initial moments of trade this morning, but boy, it's really livened up, and unfortunately it's to the downside with heavy losses in both live cattle and feeder cattle. The hog market, it gapped higher after a strong finish last Thursday and has extended to the upside and trading moderately to sharply higher in the futures here to kick off the new year.
All right, yeah, boy, there's some trends happening in that market that we're going to have to pay close attention to. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I am Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us.
Hello.
You know, the used machinery market that we talked about there with Greg, I mean, it's going to be in the top three of the markets that experienced significant change in 2020 for a number of reasons, and COVID being one of them. And then the meat export markets. There's another market that has experienced so much growth in 2020 that we've got to talk about where things stand right now with Dan Hallstrom. He is the president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, joins us right now. Dan, Happy New Year to you. Welcome back to AgriTalk.
My pleasure. Happy New Year to you as well.
Good, good, good. So if we're going to look for, I mean, the meat export business was full of headlines in 2020, but if you're going to look for the biggest headline, you got to go to U.S. pork going into China, right?
Yes, without a doubt. Yeah, we are seeing a phenomenal record-breaking year on pork into China. A lot of that has to do with their situation with their domestic supply with African swine fever, but nevertheless, we feel like the demand is growing as well there in addition to that issue. So yeah, I think we're sitting right now through October at 835,000 tons for the year. We think we'll end up the year when we get November and December in probably somewhere around a little over 1 million tons, which by far will be a record for China.
You know, for pork demand to continue to grow in China after what they went through with ASF, I mean, that says a lot about the amount of pork that the rest of the world can supply into that market.
Yeah, they're importing from the world, literally.
Yeah.
The largest suppliers would be the European Union, Germany, with not so much right now since they have ASF, but Spain, Holland, these are big supply sources, but also from South America, from Brazil. So there's a lot of people supplying into China. But I think there's no doubt, too, though, that even though demand is pretty solid into China, they are restocking or repopulating their salver very quickly. And consequently, I think the demand, the import numbers for 2020 or for 2021 will definitely be lower as compared to 2020 for that reason.
Lower, but still, we're still going to be looking at export numbers into China for U.S. pork that they'll probably end up being second on the list, won't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
This will be our largest year. We're estimating probably down somewhere in the neighborhood of 15% to 20% in 2021. But even down 15% or 20% will be the second largest year ever into China. So still a very, very important market going forward, no doubt.
Okay. So if our exports into China are off by 15% to 20%, what are we going to do with that meat? I mean, there's got to be other markets in Asia that we can turn to.
Yes, this is something that the industry and USMEF, we've been working on this nonstop. Every year, we're diversifying that customer base to the extent possible is always a focus. So the obvious ones, you got the big markets like Japan and Korea that are very important and growing, and I think we'll continue to see growth there. But you've got some emerging regions, and not only in Asia, but looking at Asia specifically, Vietnam, Philippines. Singapore. These are regions that show a lot of potential for growth as we go forward. And then you could come over into the Latin American area. Regions like Central America and South America are growing as well. So there is no shortage of opportunities out there, but we just need to get move on it quicker and get more aggressive in approaching some of these opportunities outside of China.
Gotcha. And Mexico, I mean, you know, Mexico was kind of a market that, well, it's obviously was the biggest market that we were sending pork into, but it's one that we can get back into and we can, I don't know how to say it, Dan. It's not like we've got to rebuild a relationship with Mexico, but we can get even tighter than what we were in 2020.
Well, without a doubt, it's our largest market volume-wise outside of China. It, go back 1 year to 2019, it was our largest market.
Right.
And the beauty of Mexico is that the product mix is quite a bit different from Asia. So from a carcass utilization standpoint, you're looking at more variety meats, you're looking at more hams, more shoulder meat, things like this into Mexico, which complements the product mix out of Asia pretty well. So, but, you know, it's interesting. The first part of 2020, the first half, we were really concerned with Mexico, especially as we got into you know, April, May, June. But I have to tell you, September, October were phenomenal. Mexico is not only rebounding, but it's well on its way back to where it was. And we're anticipating that when November and December stats come out, we're going to see big, big numbers back into Mexico.
Yeah. Well, in the weekly export sales reports, Dan, I know that you're watching those too in November and December. It's not unusual to see Mexico right at the top of the list of the pork buyers. So
Exactly, right. Yeah.
Yep. So we're seeing some really, really good signs from Mexico getting into the new year. Let's flip over to beef, Dan. We always talk about pork when it comes to exports, but it's an important market for beef too.
Without a doubt, yeah. Now, we're going to be down slightly this year, a couple percent, more than likely when we get to through December. We're 7% down at the moment through October, but we see beef rebounding a bit in November, December. Let's be honest, the big difference globally between pork and beef is that beef is probably more reliant on the food service business globally. Yep. And, of course, food service has taken a dramatic hit, as we all know, globally, U.S. and globally. That will come back. And we're forecasting that there's going to be a significant rebound in food service globally in 2021. And complement that with the progress that's been made at retail. Retail's been phenomenal globally. Pick a market, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Mexico. Retail markets and the e-commerce segment of retail has just been booming, as we all know, and the global markets are no exception to that. So I think that you combine that momentum that we have in those areas with a rebound in food service and beef is well positioned, U.S. beef is well positioned to take advantage of that. The other thing I'd like to say, too, about beef is that, you know, we had some significant access improvements as we entered into 2020. We had the Japan-U.S. Ag Agreement that was implemented January 1, almost a year ago to the date today. We had the China Phase 1 Agreement, which doesn't benefit just beef. It benefited pork as well. But in the case of Japan, we were at about a 14% duty disadvantage on beef going into Japan. So today, we are on the same level playing field with our competitors like Australia.
Yep.
And I think this is significant because, you know, we talked about COVID for the last 11 months, but the reality is that these access improvements are still there today. We are on a level playing field. So I think this is another advantage that we tend to forget a bit about when we're dealing with a pandemic. But these macroeconomic changes that happened last year are still there today, and they'll help us going into 2021.
Right. Dan, real quickly on this one, the tensions between Hong Kong and China, did that affect how you are dealing with that region?
Well, yes and no. You know, tension in that region of the world is becoming normal. I guess it's to what degree there's tension. Yeah, no doubt. Having this national security law that China has in place and their implementation upon Hong Kong was not good. It made doing business, a little bit tougher into Hong Kong. But that being said, Hong Kong imports 97% of its food, so they're still relying on imports, and the okay. business still continues there. So, I think it's concerning, but, the whole situation with China is so complex that we're kind of getting used to dealing with it to some extent.
Okay. Hey, take a minute here and tell me about the opportunities in Central America.
Well, Central America, you got 7-8 countries down there, countries like Guatemala, El Salvador, Panama, Nicaragua. You add them up, and they're significant. It's probably today more of an established pork market than beef, although both are growing. And, we're going to be seeing some significant growth over time. We're going to be around a $250 million market on pork for 2020 into Central America.
Nice.
And we're going to be, I'm looking up the beef one because I don't remember off the top. It's going to be close to a $100 million market on beef as well, so the region. So these are the sorts of markets that look a lot like Mexico did 20 years ago.
And yep.
Look where Mexico is today.
Yep.
So
right.
I think there's real growth opportunities as the middle class further emerges in regions like Central America.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Years and years of hard work are paying off in 2020, Dan, didn't they?
They did, but yep. The good news is I think there's more to come.
That's awesome. Well, we'll get back to you and get an update later in the year, but boy, it sure feels like it's all systems go there. Thank you so much for the update. Appreciate it. That is Dan Hullstrom. He is the president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. All right, when we come back, Davis and I are going to wrap up today's first hour of AgriTalk.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
You know, Chip.
Yes, Davis.
I got to be honest.
Okay.
I was listening to Greg Peterson.
Yeah.
It something occurred to me.
Yeah.
If you kicked in the door right now and put a gun
boom.
To my head.
Whoa.
Easy with the boom there. I couldn't start a Facebook Live. I have no idea how to do that. But that's one of the things that he was talking about that could really impact the auction game moving forward, dude. I hadn't thought about that. And then you were talking about the meat exports and stuff and how things are just changing.
Oh, yeah.
And things to look forward to and ideas that we thought maybe didn't fit together now fit together. Demand sources that we didn't consider. I mean, Mexico being a driver of export demand of other cuts beyond what China is looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, Mexico's demand for pork has always looked really similar to the U.S. meat case. It's mm-hmm. always looked that way. And mm-hmm. and like Dan was explaining, it's when you get the combination of the processed and some of the offal and some of the things that we just don't put, they might make them into a hot dog, but the hooves and the yep. tongues and some of the organ meats that mm-hmm. we send to China, it's just that doesn't fit with the U.S. or, for the most part, the Mexican
right
diet when it comes to pork. The yep. Mexican and the U.S. Choices have always been pretty similar, but it was definitely reinforced in 2020, and they're such great complement markets. It's crazy. The technology that you were talking about with in the auction world, yeah. one of the things that it is proving is once again is that farmers are early adopters when sure. it comes to technology. They always have been. Always have been. Now, within that group of early adopters being farmers, you've still got your early adopters, you've still got your followers, you've still got your laggers, you know, mm-hmm. all of those different classes of how they adopt new technology, they're all still there. They're all still there. But one of the things that helped that used equipment market in 2020 was the want of old technology.
Right. Yes.
You know,
ironic.
I want my pre-def tractors is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It's just absolutely amazing how it all fits together. Really.
Well, and we had in the land market too, mm-hmm. there was consternation over, well, geez, how are we going to do auctions now?
Right.
And here we go. I'm finding more and more reports, not just of, well, this was also offered online, but online only auctions. Right. It's becoming its own exclusive market.
Well, and I wondered, and we talked about this mid-year, Davis, when that step would be, because mm-hmm. some auction companies are going to want to have a completely level playing field for all potential bidders.
Yep.
So even if you're on site, the only way that a bid might be accepted is if you make it online.
Right. Through your phone.
Through your phone, yeah. Oh, yep. Just crazy.
At the same time, you might be in competition with some investor dude from Boston, from Los Angeles. Who knows? You know, right. Once you open that up, I mean, technically it goes worldwide, right? It's the World Wide Web.
Right, right. And on the equipment side of things, mm-hmm. just the willingness to transport equipment and ability to transport equipment, which has always been there, but the willingness to do it for a piece of used equipment, I think, took a step mm-hmm. forward in 2020 as
for sure.
well. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, volatility is back in these markets again, like we have been talking about throughout the show. The Dow mm-hmm. is off more than 600 points now, about 610 points. We've got a fair amount of uncertainty as we get into 2021. And as I said that, I wonder if the markets aren't responding to some clarity.
Mm-hmm.
In the fact that the Democrat candidates down in Georgia surged over the weekend.
Yes.
And over the New Year break, I guess is what we should call it. I'm not going to look at a poll and say, well, this poll is saying that. So, Democrats have won. I'm mm-hmm. not going to say that because we will wait for the voters to come in, but an unbelievable amount of early voting has already taken place. Mm-hmm. The odds are pointing to Democrat victories in both of those Senate races. Are they going to be close? Absolutely. Absolutely. But they are, it's going to have my attention big time come tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Could really change the way that this whole because we've been talking about since November 3rd, essentially, we've been talking about, hey, but it looks like the Congress is going to be split with Republicans in the Senate and Democrats in the House,
mm-hmm.
Which makes it easy for President-elect Biden because he can then blame the Congress that, well, here's why we're doing nothing. It's because I can't get anything through Congress.
Yep.
Well,
sounds like 4 years of organic tea and soy burgers for all. Ahead.
At least two. get us to the midterms, and we'll see what happens at that point.
That's good for bean demand. I mean, yeah, I guess there's that.
Yeah. Right. All right. Hey, thanks everybody for listening this morning. You've got to come back this afternoon. Jared Creed from JC Marketing. We'll be our guest, and tomorrow morning we got Ethan Lang from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
That's right.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.